This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Steve Mazon. Before we get to Steve, here's a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. We are Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. We have a Facebook page. Follow us. Subscribe, please. While you're subscribing, a lot of you are probably listening on one of those streaming services, be it Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever. If that's the case, I do ask you to please give us a good rating because that'll help more people find the show by boosting our presence. That's a cool thing for you to do. Cost you nothing, and it's a way of helping out. If you think you'd be a good guest for the show, or maybe you know somebody who would, or if you want to ask me some travel questions or just tell me I'm awesome, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Steve Mazon's voice may sound familiar to those of you who have listened for a while and are used to the intro that I've been using on this program for, way too long. But I like it. Steve's is one of those voices you hear during the Travel Tales podcast theme intro where he said, and there was this big explosion like out of a Hollywood movie. That's him. And he will explain that story in this conversation as well. But Steve is a fellow comedian, a fellow alumni of Northern Illinois University. There are a few of us out there doing comedy, and we've been friends for quite a while. Like me, from the Chicago area, he went into the Navy out of high school, came out, went to college, moved out to the Bay Area, and started comedy out there in San Francisco. And he's lived in LA a long time, and we've been friends for quite a while. And he was one of the early guests on the Travel Tales podcast, and it's great to have him back. It's been too long. And I'd been meaning to get him back on the show for a while, but I had been following his latest travels in Europe on Facebook, where he was on a armed forces tour performing comedy for the troops with a few other people. And I thought, when he gets back, we got to get him on to talk about this latest trip. It looked really cool. He was gone for about 2.5 weeks, and I thought he was traveling throughout Europe, but it turns out it was all in Poland. So we talk about that and a lot of other stuff, and it was good to catch up. You can go to stevemazon.com and find out everything about him. You can find him at Steve Mazon on Instagram and everywhere else. And of course, you could hear his story right here on Travel Tales. Here's my chat with Steve Mazon. The hilarious Steve Mazon back in town. Thank you so much for doing it. We are literally probably a mile from each other right now.
Yeah.
But yes. Still too lazy to do it in one room.
We're not gonna come one way or the other.
Well, yeah, I don't know when you're awake these days because you just got back yesterday or something.
I literally 36 hours ago got back after a. By the way, have you ever kept track of this? Because you travel so much. I mean, what's the longest travel day you think you've had? But this one ended up being from when I woke up to when I walked in my front door was 29 hours.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere between 24 and 30 hours, I think it's been.
Yeah.
And where did you start?
This one started in Krakow, I can't pronounce the name of the, it was in Poland.
Okay.
The city I was in was, we just started, it's like Z-S-C-E-Z-I-W. So we just started calling it Z-Z-Z-Z.
Right.
None of us could pronounce it.
The vowels are all in the wrong place, if there are any.
Exactly. So we all knew what we were talking about. We said here in but we had to take a 2-hour train, two trains from to Krakow. And then, but the schedule was supposed to be Krakow to Frankfurt to San Francisco, San Francisco to LA. But when we got to Krakow, it started snowing and, they started bumping everything, so missed the first leg. And then luckily going into Los Angeles, we're lucky here that there's lots of flights going. So they were still able to get me in just 5 hours later than that another guy I was traveling with. He was trying to go to Phoenix, and he got bumped to the whole next day then.
Oh, gosh. So wait, yeah. Was this USO, or I know this is
Armed? Armed Forces Entertainment, which for people who don't know is basically like the USO inside the military. So the USO is an outside of the military organization that you know provides entertainment for the troops, and Armed Forces Entertainment is a group inside the military that handles that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
So this was a tour for them.
I didn't know the USO was an outside deal. I mean, is it privately owned? I mean, who's running the USO?
It's a good question. Yeah, I have a buddy. Well, you probably know him. Rich, have you ever worked for Rich Davis? Do you know Rich?
No, but I know the name.
He ran a comics on. Everyone you know that we both know has done these tours, Burton Brightwell, that kind of stuff. And he worked for, he got out of the, I think he was a Marine and got out of the military and started working with the USO. And then he didn't like it. He didn't like kind of what they're doing. He's like, yeah, they're kind of star humpers, you know. So he kind of started his own thing, but found out about Armed Forces Entertainment, which is kind of on the inside that kind of organizes these, you know, a bunch of different entertainment for the troops around the world. So so this is for me, it's been, I think, since I started in 2003 doing these tours in between Iraq, Afghanistan at the beginning, that's where I was going. Now Japan, shows here in the States, Poland, other, you know, Eastern Bloc countries now that we have places in, Korea, that kind of stuff. I think I've done like 35 of these tours.
Oh, my gosh.
And whatever it might be, 22 years, I guess. So I just love them. You know, I was in the Navy when I was younger, so I was on a submarine. So, you know, we obviously did not get entertainment there. So it feels good to kind of give back and do these shows. So, I've been pretty lucky.
So do you do mostly, it seemed like these tours were more Army, or was there Navy involved?
These were mostly Army. Some of them had Air Force. Over the years, it ends up being a nice mix. Like every once in a while, we would be at in the middle of Afghanistan. And you'd run into like three Navy guys, and you're like, "We're in the middle of the mountains. What are you doing here?" They have some equipment that had to be used, but there was no water near it.
So, as a former Navy man, do you particularly crush at the naval bases? I mean, do you do really well?
Well, that's so funny. You know, I've never made the distinction if I do better.
You must have Navy specific jokes. I mean,
yeah. You know what? It's so funny now that you're saying this. You've ever had this as a comic where people will be like, "Well, you probably have stuff about that." And you're like, "No, I guess I have never written anything about it." Like, people are always like, "You're on a submarine. You've probably written a bunch. You probably got 20 minutes on a submarine." I don't have one joke about being on a submarine.
I tried to write a bit for the cruises on something you told me about a hot cot or whatever it is.
Hot racking?
Hot racking. Why did I think it was a hot cot or something?
Yeah, well, cots and the soldiers.
Okay,
yeah.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, the way I set it up was, you know, we're bitching about there's not enough ice cream at the buffet, and my buddy was in a sub with a hot rack. Basically, you're sleeping in 8-hour shifts in the same bed. Is that what it is? You're sharing it with two other dudes?
Six hour shifts, three guys sharing two bunks.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, two are hypothetically sleeping or using the bunk, and the other one's working, and then you just rotate three guys through two bunks. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, hopefully, yeah.
I said the next time
it was the Navy, so sometimes, I guess, two people would end up in the bunk. Yeah.
Oh, man. I said, next time you complain about there's not enough sprinkles on your ice cream, just remember there's a guy, there's people like 100 feet below us or whatever, 200 feet below us sitting sharing cots. Yeah. And just sleeping in another guy's beer farts. Thank you for your service.
Thanks for your service. Yeah.
Oh, God. Let's talk about thanks for your service. Some people find, I don't know. I do thank the veterans for their service, but how often should I thank? It almost feels obligated, right? I don't remember like when we were growing up, like in the 70s or 80s, people didn't say that. Every veteran that walked by. I mean, was this like a post 9/11 thing? Maybe it is.
Yeah. I wonder if maybe that amped it up more. I think that, and probably as silly as it sounds, probably even the social media too. Like it just, you know, then everything's got to be hashtagged and, you know, for each holiday versus just, you know, being there on its own, do what you want. I do remember my dad was in the Coast Guard. Not like when I was alive or anything. I don't have any memories of being in the Coast Guard, but he was in the Coast Guard. In fact, I'll give you a little, since we're comedians here, a little Coast Guard joke.
Oh, good.
For you here. This is a little, you know, there's always the rivalry between the services.
Yeah.
So this was, you find someone else has been in the Coast Guard. So let's do a little role playing here, Mike. You pretend you're in the, you just told me you were in the Coast Guard. Okay. And then I'd be like, oh, how tall are you, Mike?
6 feet.
6 feet. Well, yeah, you have to be at least 6 feet to be in the Coast Guard. That way, if your ship goes down, you could just walk back to shore. It was
boom.
Boom.
Kills him. Coast Guard. I would think that's what I was wondering, because it was like anybody does military bases and stuff. I would think the Coast Guard's always the butt of the joke, right? It's got to be.
Yes. Well,
they all make fun of the Coast Guard.
Yeah. Yes, I think you're right. It may slowly be giving way to Space Force.
Oh, see, I was going to say.
Space Force might be taking over.
Just nerds sitting in front of screens all day, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. So wait, what was your question? Why did I go off on the Coast Guard there?
Particularly kill on naval bases?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I haven't noticed the difference between any of those. I definitely have some military jokes for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That go to, you know, that kind of, you know, enlisted submarine jokes, some of that kind of stuff. So making, you know, self-deprecating stuff.
Yeah. So now these tours that you do, and this one in particular, I was just following you on social media, but it seemed like you were gone for 3 weeks. Was it 4 weeks?
This was about 2.5 weeks. Yeah.
And okay.
I think the longest I've ever been on one, I think, was 30 days. And that was, I think, Iraq and Afghanistan way back in the day.
Okay.
And without complaining about the other people I was working with, they're fantastic. If you followed along on social media, you saw how much fun we were having. But at one point we did this. I toured with three of the four people we toured with did it last year. And last year, you know, what are they? There's someone that says this, right? Comparison is the death of enjoyment or whatever. You know, think that saying is. So last year when we did it, we did pretty much the same bases over maybe a few days longer. And we had a driver, like a chauffeur that would take us in a sprinter van between all these places. Or for 2, 3, 4 hours, you'd be in the sprinter van. It's kind of fun. You didn't, you know, really have to pay too much attention. And this year they kind of backed off. We had nicer hotels last year. This, you know, we're doing it just after the government shutdown is when we were kind of here. Yeah. Things have been pared back. We were still staying in very nice hotels, but we had to kind of, we were being dropped off now between the bases, between, you know, army guys on the bases in like a van, you know what I mean? Just picking us up, dropping us at a McDonald's where the other one from the other base could pick us up. In fact, one of the comics compared it to, like, he's like, this reminds me of my divorced parents dropping me off, you know, when I was a kid.
In front of the McDonald's.
Exchanging us a rest stop. Yeah. Along the way. But so they were like started, you know, bitching and complaining about it. Like, this is, you know, it was better last year, that kind of thing. But to your point, I'm like, I've done so many of these, and I remember Afghanistan and sleeping on a cot and that kind of thing. And there's no AC and spiders and all this stuff. So it was just like, hey, we're here for the troops. Like, you know, it's hard to complain. They're living in this every single day. But to their point, they were like, hey, look, we're comedians. This is what we do. We bitch. We bitch and complain. Yeah. We're not really, you know. I was like, okay, yeah.
So, yeah. If you were one of the other people you were with, it was three other comics? And I think at least one was another veteran, right?
Yes. Another Army veteran. And then the other two hadn't served before. But yeah, we're great.
Okay. And now one, it was Renee Percy was with you, right?
Renee Percy, which, if you know her, she's, you know, obviously she's Canadian,
she's
very charming, very funny, and, you know, glams up for the show. So that's a nice thing, you know, so you don't just get a bunch of, you know, guys looking like me coming in.
Right, yeah.
It's a little bit of the Bob Hope thing. Like, yeah. You know, like, yeah, now here comes, and, you know.
Anita Ekberg. Give it up for Anita Ekberg.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. Did she get her own room? I mean, did you guys ever have to share? You don't have to do that.
Nope, never had to share on any of the tours. So, yeah, I've been with her. In fact, yeah. I recommended her for the tour because I'd worked with her once before, and I was like, you know, listen, your whole show's about traveling, and I think as you get older, especially, you know, you love the places you get to visit, but the travel to get there is the pain in the ass more.
Yeah, I always tell people we're not paid for the time on stage; we're paid for the 30-hour travel day you just did.
That's what you did. Exactly. Oh, man. It's like the Mad Men. That's what the money's for.
Exactly.
But she's an all-timer, like better than, it's going to sound misogynistic to say this, but she's better than men that I've traveled with. Like, they're more pain in the ass.
High maintenance wise?
Yeah, exactly. I think just in general with the things women have to bring and, you know, multiple outfits and makeup and gels. In fact, she has some jokes about it, we were all telling her to bring a carry-on, and she's like, a carry-on? Yeah. I can't fit everything I need to bring. But she is by far, I think, the easiest person to travel with, even over every guy I've ever traveled with. She's fantastic.
She's also Canadian, so that helps too.
Yeah. What lends to it, yeah.
That passport 100%. Breezes through while we just, you know, get her held up.
Keep it going.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So if, when you're doing this show, I mean, is it like you pull in, is it multiple shows or is it one show on base and do you split it up? Is it the same lineup? Do you guys, shuffle it? One person close one day and.
Usually we'll do a shuffle of it. But for whatever reason this time, you know, someone by default just automatically gets the, moniker of tour leader. Like, okay, when you check into the hotel, this guy's going to handle everything. He's going to send the invoice back to the people, you know, running it, mm-hmm. the military, that kind of stuff. So that was me for this thing. So when we got to our first show, I hosted, and then that lineup, it ended up being the two other people after me, Keith and then Renee, and then the other Army guy, he closed it, which was good because we were performing for Army people, and he's relatively fresh out. But just before COVID, I think he got out. So he has a lot of material that kind of plays. Okay. And so that was our lineup most of the time, and I do think there was something to it. Although there was one point, you know, we call it in the business, the hosting, taking the bullet. You know what I mean? There's times a lot of these soldiers have only seen comedy. You know, there are a lot of them are 19 to 22.
They're kids.
In that range.
They're kids.
They're kids. They only know comedy from their phone. They've never
YouTube.
Seen it live.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've never been to a comedy club. So especially off the top, they're very tight. And, you know, I kind of like the challenge and it does build up. It's like ankle weights, you know,
yeah.
Where you're like, okay. But I think halfway through the tour, you know, I think we did 10 or 11 shows, maybe. I think halfway through the tour, there was just one night where I was like, hey, we need to switch it up tonight. I need a night off of hosting.
Yeah.
And we switched it up and I ended up closing. And I got to say that I think that was our best show. And not because I closed, but I mean, just we all ended up having great sets that night. So I was hoping that maybe someone would be like, hey, should we stick to this lineup? But no, everyone wanted to go right back to the other lineup the next night. So.
Right. Well, you did this show in its early days. And for people who listen to the intro and are regular listeners, you are still in the intro. A clip of your voice is still in this. How long I've been using this thing.
And
there was this huge explosion on the way, like out of a Hollywood movie, like somebody you were on a plane and the thing exploded.
No, I remember. I know exactly what you're talking about. I was on one of these tours. This would have been 2008, I think. And Afghanistan. I think it was Afghanistan. And we had just done a show, and they sent some insurgents just through IED
over
and on into the base we were on, and it ended up landing on the ammo dump. And so for about 5 hours, there was just explosions over and over because it was blowing up our image. It was a great shot by that insurgent. Yeah. But and the fire department, you know, on the base couldn't even go. They didn't want to risk anyone's life, so they just let it keep going off. So I mean, it was out of a Hollywood movie. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. And there you go, folks. If people have been hearing that for years,
at least now you can get it updated.
Yeah. Now you don't have to go back and listen to your old episode. You can tell all the same stories now. So now let's talk about now going now. I mean, I say, you know, it's peacetime, but it isn't really. We're as Americans, we're never really at peace.
Yeah.
And Poland, you know, you're pretty close to Ukraine there. And they have a lot of refugees and stuff coming in. What
100%.
Did you see any, was there anything close to you? Was any kind of action close to where you're at?
I will say all of the bases, you know, so I would say out of the 9 or 10 shows we did, 7 or 8 of them we had done last year. And they all seem to have upped their game or have more people on them now. And I remember there was one last year where we were like, why is this base even here? There's like 20 people. There's not even, you know, they're all living in one building and that kind of thing. And you could tell it was almost like the idea was just to have them there in case something happens. Now there's 20 people there to get everything amped up for whatever's going to be there much bigger. But these are, so they have some people on, you know, just waiting for things to go. The one thing this actually happened, I didn't notice much besides that, just besides the numbers increasing this year. But I do remember last year, and again, not to be political about it, but we went there right after the election last year, last November. And we got one night we went out. We were done with our show or had the night off. And so we went out to like a Christmas market in one of the towns in Poland. And we took a taxi and we maybe drove 500 yards. And the guy pulled over and he turns around and he's like, Americans? And we're like, oh, shit. You know, and we're like, yeah. And he's like, what's going on? Like, what's good? You know, when things are bad for you, they're terrible for us. Like, this is not like he was really scared. Like,
yeah.
Not good. So I think the people themselves had that kind of feeling like, hey, you know, again, you and I grew up in Chicago. It's a big Polish area.
Yeah.
And so I remember in the 80s, you know, when they were kind of striking out on the solidarity.
Solidarity, sure. But yeah, well, I was going to ask you that about, you know, the vibe and if it's, you know, we get asked about this as Americans all the time. And we're not a political show, but I mean, it's, is there a different reaction? I don't know how much of the time you spent, you know, going into town and chatting with locals. I mean, the base, you're always going to be more rah-rah, but I mean, I don't know. Have the soldiers or anybody talked about how the locals are treating them these days? Is it different or anything like that?
They seem very happy to have them there. I think to your point about the refugees coming in from Ukraine and Ukraine being right next door. And I think they realize, having the Americans there, you know, there's the Poles have their own army and stuff, but it's not,
well, it's, you know, we're still there now. You know?
Yes. And we did, we went out a lot, especially this trip, you know, and mingled with the locals and never anything like, said specifically, on that front, but they all incredibly welcoming. They seem very happy to have us there, like I said, without saying it.
Yeah. So other than Poland, what were the other stops on this tour?
This trip was all Poland.
All Poland.
So just a bunch of all Poland.
Wow.
And then all Poland all the time.
Did you get to go to, I've only really been to Krakow, you know, and I went to, Auschwitz. I don't know if you ever, did you get a chance to go there?
In fact, yeah, we saw a road sign for Auschwitz and, I think it was a couple hours. So didn't get to take it in.
It's not really comedy friendly, but, on your tour, but I think it's a must-see. Right. I always tell people to go. It's a hard day, but it's worthwhile, you know,
probably one. Yeah. That's going to stick with you forever.
I always thought Krakow though was, really beautiful. And I compare it to Prague without the tourists, as much tourism. Mm. It's like half the price, you know, but I thought it was every bit as beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, good. That's good to hear. Cause I still haven't made it to Prague and that's on my list.
Yeah.
But yeah, Krakow was beautiful. Warsaw was nice. We didn't see it so much time there. Poznan is another place we went that was really nice. And yeah, they have these Christmas markets that start springing up, and then the snow starts coming down while we're there. It's just very magical, and every street is cobblestone, and they have this really European way of living where it's like, especially in the Midwest, you'd be driving through Illinois where we grew up, like, and there'd just be a town, and you're like, what is this town 4 hours away from any city? Like, what's keeping this town here? Like, right. What's the business that all these people just set up? So it's almost like that. The terrain's very Wisconsin-like, but you would come across these towns, and every town had at least one church, even if it was small. Sometimes not just a church. It looked like 50 houses. The church was some gigantic,
it's massive,
cathedral,
right?
Cathedral, Gothic, gorgeous, stained glass, everything. And then these houses, and then there was always a square every right. time, this beautiful square that was surrounded by both businesses. And then
yeah, the church is at one end of the square. Usually it's the exactly. same. Oh, just in Mexico, yeah. It's the same exact yes. thing. You know, the European, the Catholic church, man, they knew what they built to impress. They built to impress, you know, it's like, maybe these people have the answer. They see a building like that. If you're a farmer and you go there and you say, Whoa, I got to join up with what they're selling.
Yes. Yeah, so they know what they're doing. As I'm describing it, it sounds like I'm saying it's cookie cutter, but each one is so individually quaint and charming that it's really fun and unbelievable. And like I said, even on the little places, you're like, well, this is just nothing in the middle of nowhere. It's still gorgeous.
So we're talking late November. What mm-hmm. temperatures are we? What are we talking in Poland around?
Yeah,
that?
I think it was down in the 30s. Yeah, almost most of the time. I think a couple nights we
like Chicago weather
up in the 40s. Yeah, it's no really secret. Is. You see why
they all went there
last year. You see why they think, I don't know if this is true, but I'm sure you've heard it, where they say the thing about there's more Irish people in New York City than Dublin.
Oh yeah,
just size wise, right?
I believe that for sure.
Yeah. And I've heard there's more Polish people in Chicago than Warsaw size wise.
Yeah.
So,
did they do the same thing when I was in Poland and people ask where you're from? I say Chicago. They go, oh, I got a cousin there. Oh, my sister lives there. Yeah. Everybody knew somebody. Everybody knew somebody in Chicago.
Yeah. So, but when you see it, like as I discovered it, because of my whole family, my dad was the Polish one in our family. He'd passed by the time I first went there. But my brother and sister and even my mom were like, oh, I'm so excited. You're going to get to see it. And it reminds me of the Midwest. It's a little gloomier. It's not as not that Chicago's a sunny place, but like I said, very, very Wisconsin feel. It's still got a lot of the Soviet bloc kind of feel in places where, there's like we were talking about these cathedrals they have. But then a lot of the businesses are just these buildings that you're like, that's there for function. There was no style put into that thing whatsoever.
It's like when you go to Croatia, the same thing, all of Eastern Europe, it's like you'll see these beautiful ornate old buildings like Baroque style. And you're like, okay, that was pre-war, pre-communism. And then you'll see this cinder block gray apartment building, just cold and brutal. And you're just going, well, I know when that was built. That was for sure after the war. So all these 50s, 60s, 70s buildings, and they would put them in beautiful places, like right on the beach. And you're going,
right?
It's like a stain on the scenery. It was horrible. I'm sure it was functional. Yeah. Well, we needed to house as many people. It's basically a project, that's a housing project right in the middle. It's like, oh, this is horrible. But I mean, and block after block of them.
But it makes Legos look fancy.
Well, that was one of the reasons Krakow was so charming, I guess, is because it was spared during the war because they had a lot of workers there. I guess they wanted to keep the factories running and stuff, so they enslaved all the locals basically and made them keep working. But so they didn't bomb it or they didn't burn it to the ground. But Warsaw was leveled. So I guess that was all rebuilt after the war. So there's a lot of that post-war ugliness. But they tried to rebuild, like in a Disney way, that square.
Right.
So I want to see that just to see this. Like, it kind of looks cool, but it's like, it seems kind of fake too.
it seems a little forced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It didn't happen as naturally.
Yeah.
It's so funny because that was, there's even the people have that kind of feel to it. You know, just growing up in Chicago, people are Midwesty. You know, we were talking about Renee being Canadian. There's a little angle to that that the Midwest has. But the people in Poland, very no eye contact, no smile if you look at someone. But the minute you start talking to them, they kind of light up then.
Yeah.
But and so we were talking to one of the kind of people on the base who was Polish about that. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's just completely, that's the Soviet influence still here, that you didn't want to look like things are going well.
Yeah. Because if things are going, it raises well, suspicious. You know, just like, what's this guy? It was a nut smiling at me for a stranger. So yeah. It was cool.
What do you have that I know?
I always found, yeah. And they're also still getting used to like customer service.
Yes.
Just like, yeah, saying, hey, welcome, hi, you know, just like smiling when you check into the hotel or something. Yeah. It's just like, I remember there was a story I saw, it's like in 60 Minutes or something, when Russia, yeah, started to open up. And there was this big famous hotel in St. Petersburg. And they had to send like reps over from the U.S., like Marriott had bought it or something like,
yeah,
that. And to tell them how to, you know, smile at the, when the guests come in. And yeah, they were like, why would I? I'm doing my job. Why would I smile?
Right.
They had to tell them, you know, say good morning or something like that. It's just these little pleasantries that you just,
yes,
didn't get,
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
You know? But so,
yeah,
like funny, in a vibe of, do you see the difference in the bases between, you know, like the ones in Iraq and Afghanistan, mm-hmm, and then the ones now that are kind of not fighting? I mean, are they a little more tense and kind of, I don't know, yeah, in a daze? I don't know. I is the vibe different? It's got to be, right?
It is. It is different. And it's so weird because it's a weird dichotomy that it, in some ways it's you know, they're not at war, but they also feel very on edge and everything is very sparse. Like, look, age-wise, look, I grew up, you know, MASH was on TV,
right,
Platoon. These kind of things. These are your ideas of what,
Top,
you know,
Gun,
war looked like. Yes, yeah. You know, people living in tents,
right,
you know, that kind of thing. Sleeping on a cot, that kind of thing. That's what I pictured. And then I remember going to Iraq and Afghanistan, and both of them at the beginning were that. You know what I mean? Like people living in tents, and we had to, even as the guests, had to sleep on cots. And I remember sleeping at the Kandahar airport. When it had just been, you know, taken over, we were just put off in some cots on the side. And, but when I came back 3 years later, you know, there was the Taco Bell and a Burger King on the base and, you know, the whole Cheney, you know, juggernaut had kind of taken over on, you know, I guess the Army guys were maybe overseeing the dining facility, but there was no Army cook like you would see in the movies that was, right, dishing stuff out. It was these third country nationals doing it. So that being said, even though Iraq and Afghanistan, they were at war actively there, they seemed much more evolved than what's going on in Poland. Maybe it's just the recency of things kind of escalating,
okay,
in Poland. We just haven't got there yet, but, yeah, much more austere, I guess.
So yeah. I was wondering how long have these bases been there? I mean, we've had a presence around, you, yeah, know, in Europe since the 40s. I mean, I don't know, are some of these bases that, yeah, old? I mean,
no, I would guess Poland probably to,
well,
to
no,
what
the
we
Russians
about,
would have it, but I mean,
yeah,
sure.
Now, then maybe at late 90s, I guess.
Okay, so somebody, but they've been there a while. I mean, you were not, mm-hmm, just, you know, these are not quick pop up. You know, bases.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but, yeah.
You were sleeping
more and more.
Yeah. You were sleeping on a base or you had hotels, you said?
No, hotels this hotel.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Kind of got spoiled.
Yeah. I mean,
beautiful hotels, too.
Oh.
I mean, very, well, you know, you've traveled enough that you know, right? There's the American hotel and then the European hotel. Even, yeah, if it's fancy, it's still like a tiny bed. You know what,
yeah,
I mean? They're not built for Americans, especially like me. Like,
yeah. Know? And various hardness of mattress, usually, yes, pretty,
exactly,
hard.
No one. Yeah. There is no memory foam going,
no,
on.
No, no, no. Okay. So the reaction of that you got, do they, mm-hmm, I don't know. What do you do? Do you hang out after the show and talk to the soldiers?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. I think I was heading that way earlier when I was saying a lot of these young men and women have never seen comedy in person. So, yeah. So I think they if they've seen any, it's just, you know, on their phone or something. So I think they don't know how to react at the beginning, and then they kind of loosen up as the show goes on, that kind of thing. But they're so then happy at the end, you know, to you know, as much as the comedy, they're happy to see someone who doesn't look like them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who's not wearing
not in uniform,
you know, camouflage or whatever, even if they're there in their you know casual PE outfits or whatever, their off work stuff. They're happy to see people that aren't from there and, you know, from back home. So yeah, we would usually, besides the show, I would say it's almost, I mean, definitely in the Iraq and Afghanistan shows, but these probably half the, whatever, if the show was an hour and 20 minutes, we would probably spend a half hour at least afterwards, just kind of mingling and talking to them. And, you know, we had like autograph cards and stuff like that. And then trading social media stuff with them. That's, you know,
yeah.
Something that's kind of, you know, come along now since I started doing these tours. They want to stay in touch afterwards, which is kind of fun.
How's the Wi-Fi in the base?
Amazing.
I bet.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, it's crazy.
They got like military satellites, you know? Come on.
They really, yeah, they have it. That's, yeah, it's nuts. How good it is. I mean, yeah, even these, yeah, the remote place, I got, you know, of course they have to have it, but it's always amazing when, you know, we're at a hotel and you're like, the fucking Wi-Fi shitty.
Yeah.
It's a nice hotel, and then you go to the base, you know, these right. All these tents, and you're like, oh my God, it's fine. I could stream everything right here.
do you average like one of these a year? One of these?
I think so. Yeah.
Military
trips.
Back
in the day, I mean, when it was at the height, when we're at Iraq, Afghanistan, and then, you know, obviously just the other bases around the world. I think there were some years where I did four, I think. But yeah, I think it ends up averaging a little over that. Like I said, yeah, I guess in 20 years, I'm in the 30s now. If you include the ones, you know, there's some bases here in the States that I've done.
Too. Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah, I just love it. I always say, you know, we were talking before we started recording, being on the, you know, cruise ships or a comedy club, wherever else you do comedy, you're always there for a different reason. Like the comedy clubs are there so you can sell drinks, right?
Yeah.
That's really,
I mean,
right.
Or sadly, so they can sell yeah, drinks. Basically,
it's a restaurant and you're the reason they come to this restaurant, right? You know, it's nice, but that's what they want to do. They want to sell nachos and yeah. stuff like that.
And then on a ship, but we're like part of the entertainment. Then people bought a cruise. They didn't buy comedy at all. So there's us one night, there's the piano player over there. There's the trivia,
the magician, right? Whatever it might be.
Yeah. The bingo.
Yeah. A singer, right?
Yeah.
So these shows for the troops always. I posted this, so I apologize if you've seen the post.
No.
But obviously, your listeners haven't had it. But as I got home, I, you know, I kind of did a little recap post, and I was talking about it. I remember one of my buddies was working with Mitch Hedberg up in San Francisco, where I started comedy, and early 2000s, obviously, and afterwards. You know, we were all kind of hanging out, talking to him. He was kind of blowing up, and, you know, we were so excited to see him and talk with him. And he was, you know, talked and even talking off stage had that kind of staccato delivery. And at one point, I think he knew, or he understood as young comedians what us talking to him meant. Because he even said, I remember when he first said, my buddy introduced, he's like, this is Steve, blah, 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 blah. These guys are comics too. And he goes, are you comedians? Or you people who are doing comedy because you wanted to be an actor. You know?
Yeah.
Like, no, we're comedians. We're comedians. And so then we started talking. So at the end of the night, he had to go to the hotel. And so he didn't have a ride. And the owner of the club's like, oh, well, I'll arrange it. And he's like, one of you guys dropped me off. And I had a car. So, you know, I had that thing where it's like, Mitch Hedberg sat in my back seat. I'm not washing this back seat ever again. But as he got out of the car, it was like out of a movie. And like I said, I think he knew. He kind of had the door open. And he kind of, you know, we're all the other comics in the car. And he goes, remember, guys, comedy is a noble profession. And then he just kind of closed the door. And, you know, it's always stuck with me. But when I do these military tours, that goes in my head a lot because it is so pure. There is no nachos. There is no drinks. There is no they paid for this whole thing. They haven't paid for anything. It's literally just, hey, these guys are away from home. can you just come and make them laugh for a while? There's nothing else to it besides the purity of that. Like, come and make people laugh. So, yeah, it feels great. I feel renewed every time. That's why every time I get an email, and half the time someone will ask me halfway through the tour, they're like, do you know what we're getting paid for this? I was like, I have no idea. I just said yes. The minute someone offers me one, I say yes, because it's such a great experience.
Well, I'd like to know how much, because it's my tax dollars are paying for it. So I'm going to need to see full receipts.
You're going to have to talk to someone. Yeah. I have no idea.
So,
probably set myself up for not being paid.
Yeah. Now that you said, oh, but do it for nothing. You're like, Jay Leno, I don't even spend my TV money.
This is all kind of money. Yeah.
But so, in terms of like clubs now, I mean, mm-hmm. are you mostly ships these days, or are you?
I'd say, yeah, mostly ships. I think there was a tipping point. Maybe a year or two before COVID, where it was like I was doing, you know, I mean, if you go back 15, 16 years, it was obviously mostly clubs, no cruise ships. And then slowly I saw the you know, as social media took over, it seemed like, yeah, less and less clubs, one or two less each year. And then luckily, you know, some cruises came in, so it was half and half. But yeah, now it's tipped the other way, where it's, yeah, I would say mostly cruises and corporates this stuff.
I haven't done a military tour, and I've always wanted to, but like even during Afghanistan and Iraq, I was doing my TBS show. So I was working every week, so I couldn't leave for, you needed at least 2 weeks away.
Right.
There wasn't really time for me to get off and do it. And then, and by the time that was over, it kind of wound down and they really stopped. There was a lot of those that were going.
Right.
And I remember Mike Burton, our friend, had one tour that he was booking and those kind of things, but it never worked out schedule wise, but I would still want to do it. But I have to say my fear now is the age. You know, it's almost like you age out of colleges as a performer.
Sure.
By 30, I was done doing colleges. Right. And now these kids are like 18, 19 years old.
Right.
I mean, I'm scared to see them in the audience at a club. You know, it's like they're not going to relate to me. I'm a guy in my 50s. You know, it's like watching their dad's age. You know, that's like when we were starting watching an old Catskills guy. You know, like, take my wife, please. You know, I don't want to look like that to them. You know,
used to say that about the cruise guys.
Yes.
Right? Like, cruise guy.
Yeah.
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 Like, you know, I think that's that vibe has changed with how much comedy is out there.
Okay.
Comedy clubs on the ships, but yeah. Definitely. But I think you do great. I mean, it's one of those, I have a list that I go to that I keep in my thing of like, do these jokes when you're on the military tours. Cause I figured out over the years, which are the great. And, you know, the bottom note is dick jokes. Bring them.
Bring them. Right? Well, that's the other thing. Do they ever like restrict any language or, anything like that? I'm sure there's gotta be like cruise rules of like no politics and that kind of stuff.
Yes, 100%. They always say no politics. That's in the thing. And they always say, yeah, nothing offensive, nothing, you know, that anyone could be, offended by, you know, that being said.
Language. I mean, they're Navy. Come on. These are military guys. They swear every day.
Every day. It would feel weird if you didn't. So, yeah, we've had it both ways where you get there sometimes at the base and you meet the chaplain. The chaplain's like, hey, please keep it clean. We don't want these kids that you're under pressure. You're like, these are soldiers.
Impressionable. You know,
here's
like a gun.
They've signed up to kill. This is what they're doing. You know, like,
we don't want to offend them with language.
And then usually right behind the chaplain is either the commanding officer of the thing, and he'll like shake your hand and pull you in and be like, say whatever the hell you want. Just make these people laugh. You know, like, you throw them a good time. I don't give a shit what you got to do. You know, like one of these great. Oh, okay, great.
Have you ever been on one? Did anybody ever get reprimanded? Like pulled aside? Go, hey.
Oh yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah, yeah. But I think it was a weird thing. I won't say the name, but it was someone we probably both know, and they hadn't had any entertainment. There was a military base in Saudi Arabia, and they hadn't done anything there in forever because of this kind of stuff. Cause they were worried about someone, you know,
here's your comic, Chewy Juicedine. Hey, welcome. What's up, my Saudi friends?
Ringing in the Catskill all the way to. So they were worried about that, even though it was on an American base, because it was in Saudi Arabia. They were worried about that kind of stuff. And we were doing a tour through Iraq and Afghanistan, and then they pulled us off and said, "Hey, you guys are going to be the first ones doing a show." And the third comic up just did something too offensive. I think he was mimicking, like, humping something.
Oh.
And they were like, some woman that was there was like, "All right, too far. You went too far. And then, I think immediately after, like, the guy who was running the tours was like, "Yeah, all your tours have been canceled. All your," and it was like,
wow.
So, so there is, that doesn't happen too much, to your point. These young men and women know what they're, they swear it's their,
I'm thinking on the base, it is a self-contained thing. I mean, I know, Saudi Arabia is notoriously tight, but you're in a base, you're still in an American base. Who did you offend? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird thing just because they're always worried about the home country a little bit. And, that they have those things where it's like, American bases, like, they won't have alcohol in the American base because in Afghanistan they don't drink. So then now no one drinks. Except, although it was all the bases, the Americans would follow that, and then you'd run into these British soldiers and they're like, "No, we got our shit. Come on over there.
Of course.
We weren't going to follow that. There's no way we're going anywhere without."
They're paid in alcohol, those guys.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're gonna tell the Italian troops they can't have wine. I mean, seriously, right. I don't want to be the one to tell them that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you send them an email because it's not. Yeah.
What was the hottest base you went to, like, ever?
I want to say it was in Iraq, and I might have been with Burton. Now that I think of it, you mentioned Mike Burton, and I remember it was 129 degrees. And
Fahrenheit.
I apologize if I told this story to you before.
That's okay.
We were, because it was 129 degrees, they had us in a trailer before that was air conditioning. But the troops were all out there, out in watching the show. So each comic would just go out and in the and be sitting. And for whatever reason, they had the military band was there too. And now they're outside with all their instruments.
With the tuba.
That was just the thing. And so I remember that. I think we were, the show was just about to start, and the band was playing before us. And so all the comics are in the trailer. And, you would hear explosions sometimes, but, they would be like, they'd usually be an announcement like, "Hey, we're going to explode something in 20 minutes. Be ready." So, to warn everyone, but we hadn't heard that announcement. And, all of a sudden, so they're playing like when the Saints go marching in, you just hear them outside. We're just, and all of a sudden, boom, this giant explosion. And all of us just look at each other and we're like, "What do? Do we dive under a table? Do we go outside and get in a bunker?" And we're all wondering, was that incoming? Was it outgoing? Was it planned? We're all scared, and it felt like a minute, but it was probably only 6 or 7 seconds. And all of a sudden, the next thing we hear is, okay, I guess everything's okay. Yeah.
It's the old Sanford and Son thing. But I ain't playing jokes for you, motherfuckers. Red Fox, ladies and gentlemen.
The Red Fox.
But for the people, for our foreign listeners, 129 degrees Fahrenheit is just under 54 Celsius. Oh, I just 54. Said it. 53.8.
Yes. I've befriended some Canadians, and then Renee on the – I've been trying to learn the Canadian.
Yeah, I just got the app. I just get the app. I always get it wrong. are you going to be doing mostly ships now for the next year?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I did some every once in a while, some obviously clubs back in the Bay Area where I started, Chicago where I grew up. And then I've been lucky to get into some Canadian clubs, which I just love because they really feel, I mean, this as a compliment. Canada is like America light. You know what I mean? It's like us without the stick up our butts or whatever, it's probably just evolution that they're probably, culturally, I don't mean this in a bad way. I mean, in the great way, they're 10 years behind us or whatever. So the crowds are still fantastic. They're ready to laugh at everything. No one's, No one's got to hang it. It's so fantastic. So, yeah, I kind of split my time between that and then a lot of cruises.
You've been doing the Yuck Yucks or the – there was Absolute Comedy that
– Absolute is the one I've been doing.
Okay.
And then, yeah, Calgary. And then, yeah, there's some a couple in Edmonton as well. And,
okay.
Yeah, been lucky.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I heard the clubs are great. It's just – they're just far apart. It's a lot of, like, yes, long travel.
Exactly. Do you ever think about that? You started in – oh, by the way, let me just go back for a second because I don't know if I brought this up. The first time we met, I don't know if you remember, was at Zany's. And I think I brought this up to you years later.
Oh, no, I don't remember.
Even though we were both living in
LA at the time? Okay.
Yeah. We were both home working Zany's downtown. And this is, you know, so probably early 2000s. And you had a joke. And I think I brought it up to you and you don't even remember it, which is so funny. Which it's so great when someone else remembers a joke you had. I remember. But your joke was, and I thought it was so super funny, you were talking about the only lesson we learned from the first Gulf War, you know, because we were just going in post 9/11, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
We obviously starting another war, and you were like, I don't know. The only lesson we learned from the last war was, hey, I kind of like those Hummers. Let's buy one of those. Do you remember that joke?
No, but that's...
It was just,
Yeah, because people, all of a sudden the Hummers started going on sale and you could buy them.
Yes, yeah. I just thought it was such a funny, and it was longer than I'm giving it.
Okay.
But that was the idea was that yeah, the only lesson we learned is like, hey, let's all drive those around.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was, it's like when I started comedy, so it was like early 90s, and the operation was a Desert Storm was going on. That what happened. And the jokes about Bush... that were about H.W. Bush, you could just recycle them 10 years later and don't even have to change the wording because it was just his son, Bush.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, God, there's Bush in the White House. I was like, oh, yeah, sure. It still works. War was in a different place, but it was still, they still kind of work.
We were so close to getting those Clinton jokes.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't remember those. I don't remember that Humvee joke, but I like it. I gotta bring that back. That was
really
wild. Cool. Yeah, I haven't done...
Isn't it crazy, though, that you could have a joke that you yourself wrote? And that's you don't have no recollection, but I do.
I was wondering about that, like with musicians, too. You know, I've seen that happen with, like, guys when people are like, oh, this, I love that song off your first album. And I'll hear an interview and goes, like, guy's like, yeah, I don't... Yeah, I'll have to re-listen to that. You know, just like, he has no clue that he wrote that. I mean, again, in his defense, it was probably 30, 40 years ago. Right. You don't remember some song he wrote in an afternoon that ended up on the album that didn't become a hit and never played live, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, oh yeah, that was just an album cut that I just,
On that note, I just heard a great story about Springsteen. It was, but it's about, what's Asbury Park.
Greetings from Asbury Park. His first album.
And is one of the songs called Asbury Park too?
I remember.
Anyways, it was about that, and he said he was singing, and someone in the front row was singing different words, and he's like, "What is this guy?" He went back and looked at the album, the liner notes, his own album, and he realized he's been singing it wrong for 30 years,
right?
His own song.
Jesus, yeah, and now I totally get it. No, yeah.
Weirdness.
When I see, like, I don't know if you've seen guys do, you know, tape their special or something like that, and then they'll use a prompter with, not word for word, but, you know, a such list.
Like an outline kind of thing.
Yeah. And, man, if I had the prompter, if I could put my set list up there, I would absolutely. 100%. You know, and you'll see like old guys like Billy Joel or something. Not so much Billy Joel, but I remember seeing, can't remember, just an older musician like that. And they had a prompter on stage with lyrics.
Yeah.
And there's somebody, you know, and there's somebody behind stage working the prompter with the song lyrics.
Yeah.
And it just totally makes sense. Now, as like, as when I was younger, I was like, how could they not know the own words of their song?
Their own song.
Yeah, they wrote it. It was like, man, I wrote this joke a while back, and sometimes some nights it just like, oh, how did that go? How did I word that?
Especially for us, because we don't have an audience singing it back to us. Or
exactly.
So it's, it changes. Yeah. Sometimes you go back, you see a tape, and you're like, I forgot that whole chunk of that joke. I've been leaving out like 10 seconds of that or something. You know?
How about the other than the blowing up? What was the worst flight experience you think you had? I mean, in terms of like any super scary one or what happened?
Yeah. The one time we were in a Black Hawk helicopter was funny because it was in Iraq. It was that same one where we eventually went to Saudi Arabia, and we were that guy who offended someone there. Brought me. He was the next comic, actually. So we were tag teaming it. I was, I think there were five of us, and I was number three, and he was four or whatever. And so it was this amazing show. It happened to be my birthday that we were over there. So it was May. It was scorching hot. But we did it in like the compound where they do all the mechanics and like the cars and stuff. The motor pool is the word I'm looking for. And but it was they had all these troops from other countries. So there were Polish troops, which was very cool. There were Canadians, there were Italians, English troops there. They were so we must have had like 500 people in this motor pool. People sitting up on top of these Humvees and stuff like this. It was just very cool looking to perform for this kind of thing. And I remember having a great set. It was so much fun. And, it tells you something about comedy, what it's worth. I'm not even bragging. I'm not a bragger, but I killed. It was great, for whatever, my 20 minutes. And then I'm bringing up the next guy, and I bring him up, and he grabs me. He doesn't let me leave stage. And he goes, hey, I just want to let you guys know it's Steve's birthday. And there's 500 people from around the world, all these different troops start singing happy birthday to me. But I had just been up there for 20 minutes. And when they got to the point with my name, they just go, comedian.
Birthday, dear comedian.
So it was just so funny. They
already forgot your name. Just killed for 20 minutes.
Just killed for 20 minutes. They had no idea who I was.
Perfect.
So we take off. They're flying us to another base right after the show, and we're up. And all of a sudden, we start seeing these like tracer bullets fly past us, and then the gunner in the window starts shooting. And our heartbeats start going up, and we're like, "Oh, is that just routine?" They're like, "No, that wasn't routine." But I remember thinking in my head. I know this sounds stupid. I don't know if you've had these moments in your life where it had been such a great day that I was like, man, if I went out like this, it wouldn't be a bad day. You know what I mean? Like
I closed strong.
Yeah,
my life.
I had a great set. It was my birthday. They sang to me. If I had to go down,
right.
It wouldn't have been bad. So that one stick comes to mind. And then maybe on one of those tours too, we had to go through Russia. And so you and I have been talking about their influence on Poland.
Yeah.
But even Russia itself, have you been?
No,
you been?
It's on my bucket list, but. It's sliding farther down.
So I can't remember where we went through. It wasn't one of the big, it wasn't Moscow or St. Petersburg, but you had to go through it on the way to Kyrgyzstan, mm-hmm. is where we were heading. And this flight, you get off a decent flight, and they put us in what, I swear to God, it felt like a storage unit. So there's just like 200 people standing in a storage unit. There's no one. There's not a desk. There's not a person from the place. You're just standing there for like an hour. You don't know if anyone's coming to get you. And then eventually they do. But when they put us on this flight, there was a guy, like it was right out of Airplane. There was a guy on a stretcher on the flight. There was a chicken on the flight that someone had. They were coming down the thing and they were like, and then they're like, fish or beef, for what they were going to serve you on the thing. And you're like, beef. They're like, we only have fish. Like, well, why are you telling me? But there's a chicken going off. There's a, this guy where you're like, should he be on a plane flying? He's in a stretcher. I remember when I got on the plane, there was a guy drinking straight out of a vodka bottle in the seat next to me. And then he kept hitting the the call button for the thing before we took off, and then he passed out. All right. So then I don't know if you ever had this where you fall asleep before you take off. I kind of nodded off, and all of a sudden I feel someone kind of nudge me, and I look up, and it's the flight attendant, and she's like looking down at me, and she's like, "What do you want?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess I'll have a Coke." And she's like, "We don't serve till we take off." I thought we were in the middle of the flight. She was coming. She thought I was the one who hit the flight.
Button, yeah.
I was like, "No, it was the Vodka Joe over here that was doing it, not me." Like, but he's sleeping, so I'm getting blamed for it. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So that was, I think, the worst flight where you're like, this doesn't seem like, yeah, there's no, it's just straight out of West Virginia or something, right?
Did you have it? Did you have any of the Polish vodka? It's good stuff.
Yes. So you had that, and but even their moonshine, I want to say it's called Bimber, something like that. We had a bunch everywhere we went. They wanted to share their version of it with us, and it's, yeah, so good. And some of it feels like lighter fluid going down your throat. Like, it's just, yeah.
How many vegetables did you eat in a 2 week span?
I don't know that I saw a vegetable that was there.
More potatoes. More sausage. Yeah, all right.
I ate my weight in pierogies over there. Just so one after another. And then they have their, they call them, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but like punchki. It's like their jelly kind of filled donuts there that are so fantastic. The food's just, again, not good for you, but amazing.
Right.
And I think, it's funny because they, even though it is none of these, like I said, I didn't see a lot of vegetables. There was one salad. The only time we kind of had vegetables and salad is when we'd eat on the base with the soldiers. But no one's, they aren't like us. They're not overweight people or anything like that. I'm sure half of it is, the quality of the food.
That, oh, sure.
Even though it is meat and potatoes, there's not a lot of preservatives. There's not a lot of, it's fresh.
Hormones. There's not, and the portions tend to be smaller and they're moving more.
I was just going to say they're moving, they're walking, to and from work and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Is Maison short for, was it shortened at Ellis Island from Mazanowski?
That's what I thought for sure. I grew up believing that. I guess I had never, I don't know if my dad would have asked his parents that, he was the second generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I always, when people would ask, they'd be like, Maison, is that French? This French house is Maison.
Yeah.
It's kind of pronounced the same. And I would say, no, it's Polish. I was like, it was probably Maisonski, taken off at Ellis or something. But one of my sister's friends last year, when I was heading over there, she's into genealogy and all that. She's like, are you going to try and look up your relatives? And I'm not that kind of guy. So I wasn't like, I'm fine with the family I know is enough of a handful. But she found there's a big one of the smaller towns, I think it was outside of Warsaw, had a big conglomeration of Maison. Yeah. Oh. So it's spelled exactly the same and there's no ski. And yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah, cool. Yeah. Well,
so I learned that late in life.
Maison and Poznan is not that too different.
That's true. Yeah. There's lots of, yes, very, yeah.
A lot of Z's over there. They love the Z.
Lots of Z. You go far. Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering, like, if you would, he still had family there that you knew of or anything like that. But
yeah, not that I know of. And yeah.
All right. That's cool. What's on your dream list in terms of just wanting to travel to? Do you have a bucket list of where you want to go?
Yeah. You mentioned Prague. Prague is definitely on there. I've been lucky to, hit all these places, both from the military tours and then comedy and then the cruises and that kind of thing. I think the big bucket list thing, I might try and, we're getting to that period here where the year's ending. I don't know if you're a big New Year's resolution guy, but I think I'm going to try and I'm definitely going to try and make this happen in my life. But maybe 2026 is when I nail it. I would love to say I've performed on every continent. And I think I have five right now. Obviously, the hard one is Antarctica.
Not a lot of clubs down there.
Well, you've gone, right?
Yeah. It was on a ship. For sure. Yeah, on a ship. Yeah.
So I wouldn't count like, okay, you performed on the ship and the ship went to Antarctica. You would have to at least, my thing would be, you would at least have to take a mic stand or not even, go ashore, even if you're just performing.
The penguin audience.
The penguins, yes, to the penguins. My hunch is to try and do one of those Arctic stations, that are down there. Like, reach out to them and be like, hey, I'll come and do it for free. I just want to come and do a show for you.
Antarctic station.
Antarctic station.
The Arctic's up top.
Yes. The other way. The Antarctic station, yeah.
What was the farthest north you go? There are bases up in, like, Barrow, Alaska and stuff. Did you ever do those?
Yes. No, I've been to Alaska a bunch of times, and on the submarine, we actually crashed through the ice.
Ooh.
Up there, but obviously no shows up there.
Yeah.
that was pre-comedy. Yeah.
But where you were, I've heard this, somebody told me, maybe it was you, that if you're going to have, if your child is going to go into one of the branches, you know, and you want to recommend something. They did say, I did hear that like the Navy, yeah, okay, if mm-hmm. you're not a fan of the water, then maybe you don't do that. But yes. they did yeah. say that the bases are the nicest ones, like of all them. If you, was it you or yeah. somebody told me that did a lot of military bases. It's like, oh, by far the Navy has the nicer bases than the Army.
I think, yeah, either you're misremembering or it wasn't me and that person's wrong.
Wrong? Okay.
Wrong. So it's by and far, if you have a kid out there and you want your kid to be safe and somewhat pampered, Air Force, by and far. I mean, they stay in great places. They everything is upgraded. Everything is new. Just, you know, they're clean, everything. They don't get dirty. They're much more technical job. You know, there's the pilots that are doing stuff and then sure. everything is support for them. So there's not a lot of getting dirty.
That was going to be my choice. That was that,
there's
be,
not a
big, I was yeah,
it's
take
not
one.
Like the Navy where there's a bilge and like a stink. I remember when I got out of the Navy, the girl I was living with, it was like 6 months I had been out back going to Northern Illinois.
Yes, our old alma mater.
One day she just goes, you know, today's the first day you don't smell like that damn boat. Like it was 6 months I had been
six
out
months
of the Navy.
To get the sea yeah. stink off you.
Yeah, to get it off me.
Yeah.
So anyways, the Air Force is, I think, the way to go. Go Air Force. And they have the best bases. Now, that being said, if to your podcast, if you want to travel, it's the Navy is what you want to do because, you know, all these other places, Marines, Army, you'll travel, but you'll be stationed at one place for 3 or 4 years.
And you'll
That's
be
just how it works.
Yeah. And so you were never stationed in one place. You were.
I was stationed in Norfolk the whole time. Once I got to the submarine, but we would travel and hit ports all around the world. That was the whole
join the Navy, see the world. That was their whole thing.
That's their whole thing. Whereas, you know, if you join the Army, you might go over to Germany, but you're going to be in Germany.
Stay there for the whole thing. Yeah,
you can jump out on your own, but you can do that anywhere. But the Navy will actually take you to, you know, these places around the world. So yeah, it depends on what you're looking for. But if you want to be pampered, definitely Air Force.
You know what turned me off on the Navy was those bell bottoms, those white suits, and those. It's like I couldn't see with the little kerchief around the neck and the
little. Yep. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. Boy, they still wear those. They still do that.
Yeah.
Oh.
They sadly do. They've gotten a little better. I will say, since I got out, and I think it was Iraq and Afghanistan that brought it out. They have switched for those are the dress uniforms that you're talking about, those Cracker Jacks, we call them.
Cracker Jack, yes.
Absolutely. Cracker Jacks. But their working uniforms was still like a kind of a jean that was a bell bottoms.
Yeah, okay.
And then like a button-up blue shirt. But during, I'm sure on the ships that they're still wearing that. But the ones who are out in the, you know, the active war zones are wearing like a camouflage as well.
Okay.
Like kind of a blue camouflage.
Yeah. Living in New York is, hey, it's Fleet Week. And you see these guys walking around. They're white.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The worst uniforms. I love, it's one of my favorite, I guess it's that thing we were talking about, cussing and swearing and, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, cuss like a sailor is, you know, that kind of thing. But if you watch movies or TV or anything, maybe it's paled a little over the past 20 years, but anything from the 20th century, for sure. Every time you see a sailor in the background, in those outfits, they're always drinking or they got their hat crooked or they're in a gutter or they're like, wolf whistling.
Tattoo. There's always a tattoo on their arm.
There's never like a respectable
sailor. Popeye. You got Popeye the sailor man.
Exactly. That's about as good as it gets is Popeye. Yeah. But it's just, it's never nice.
Yeah. Well, so was it like, you know, we're as children of the 80s did, because I remember Jamie Kaler, you know, another comic who was a Navy veteran. He said, Top Gun worked on him. It was basically a recruiting film, which I didn't realize at a time. But it totally was. He said, he's like, I got to admit, it worked on me. It made me join. Yeah. It was
100%.
You too?
Oh, there's so many guys. Yeah. Because, it was a couple of years, came out a couple of years before I went in. And it wasn't, I think I had that idea of like, I'd not maybe even being a pilot. I know I probably wasn't that smart.
Yeah.
But, yeah, being on an aircraft carrier, it just looks so cool, right? Like, who wouldn't want to wake up and do that and be part of that? I went the other way, being on a submarine, not seeing nothing. But
did you get to oil up and play beach volleyball with your fellas?
Exactly.
In the most homoerotic scene that we didn't realize it was at the time.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, and Kaler got like stationed in San Diego, which he was that guy playing volleyball.
Yes. Yeah.
For 4 years, I was like, you bastard.
Right to it. Yeah.
Yeah. My old roommate, John Bongiorno, comic, you know, he was my roommate in Chicago and he was an Air Force guy. But yeah, I mean, he was stationed in Vegas for 4 years in the early 80s. And it was just like he would have a side job bouncing at the casinos, you know, right, and stuff. Yeah. Like, okay.
It doesn't, it's like, that doesn't
thank
feel
you
like
for
that.
Your service, but it sounded like pretty good service.
Exactly. That's where we were going earlier when you were talking about the thank you for your service. Like one of the comics, not on this trip, but someone else has a joke about it. Tom Tran maybe, and he about veterans not knowing what to say. Like thank you, yeah. I guess. Yeah, thank you for thanking me, or what? You know, who knows what the right thing to say is.
But you know, we see, especially with, you know, we do these cruises, and there's a lot of older guys on there, and they're all walking around with the veterans hats, and the ship has the the meetup groups, you know, military veterans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm torn on, like, I mean, you don't wear the hat, do you? I mean, the Vietnam guys, I cut a little slack too. They kind of got a raw deal when they came home and stuff like that. But it was 50 years ago. I mean,
exactly right. They're still,
those are guys that really want to talk about it. You know, if you're wearing,
share their stories. Yeah.
It's like wearing a political hat. You're asking to be asked or confronted in some way. You want to be people come up to you. You know what I mean?
Like you're gonna love this. I did, and I know you do some corporate stuff too. I did this, at some levels, it was a corporate gig for this submarine convention, and this will show you how like little I'm into that stuff. Like I, it's a submarine convention. I was on a submarine. They found out I did comedy. They invited me. I love it, and it was so much fun. But on stage, I said, they probably told you I'm a submariner, and the whole crowd, it was like 500 people in this thing at this convention, like just woo, booed me because they refer to themselves. Listen, I was on a submarine. I served. I don't think they believe me after this. They're like, it's submariner. I was like, oh, I don't think that's correct English. They're like, it's submariner. I think it might be a generational thing. You guys are older. Say submariner. I think it's submariner. But people were angry.
Well,
I lost half the crowd for the rest of the show. They were bare. People came up to me afterwards, like, how could you say that? And they're like, you know, I had to argue English with people. They're like, it's not a submarine, you know. And I was like, no, but it's not the Seattle Mariners, right? Like, right. What are you talking about? We know when you add stuff, it changes it, you know. But they were very angry.
Boy, that's a gray area, because I mean, I don't know. Part of it is because, with the comic book when we were growing up, there was a comic. There was a superhero named the Submariner, but. I don't know. Maybe that was a Midwest thing, you know, that we said it, and maybe they said it different in New York. I don't know, but it was Submariner, right?
It is. It's yes.
But
it's,
Submariner it's just, does make sense too.
Right, exactly. It goes back way. So anyways, at that's one so point, funny. Yeah, I was just like,
you're like, I was it. Like, I was on a hot rack. God damn it. You don't disrespect me.
I kind of said, I was like, you know, this is the reason I got out from shit like this. Cause I don't want to, I don't care if it's submariner or submariner. I don't care. Yeah. So I was like, we're in the Navy. This would we would be making fun of this shit. Like,
right.
This is the whole idea.
I always wonder about that with literally I just took a walk and down the street from me is an American Legion. And I walked by there's the VFW halls, and, you know, I've done shows in VFW halls. And would those things, you know, and I guess all men's, or moose lodges and elks lodges and things like that.
Yeah.
They're kind of like hurting now because young people don't do these things.
Yeah.
And they're always looking for new members. And do they ever recruit you? Do you ever go to the VFW halls and things like that?
I'm sure over the years I went, popped out with someone else to, half a dozen in my time after the Navy. And then, like I said, more so to do shows for them and that kind of thing. And I think it's, I do think there's just it's a certain type of person, and you know what I mean. We're generationally,
yeah.
You know, our parents coming out of World War One and then two, and you know, Korea and all this kind of there was just much more of a identity to it. Even those things, like I always laugh at the thing, like you know, how big tattoos are now. And, you know, it used to be the only people who had tattoos were, you know, some degenerate sailor.
Sailors and bikers. That was it. You know, it was like either a Navy guy or a biker.
So I think people, to the point about the bikers and stuff like that, they see it as a thing. And I again, it's not how I approach it, but I do think there's that angle. You know, I love movies. My podcast that I was doing for a while was about movies. I do think that's what's so great about A Few Good Men is it's one of those, like, you kind of get what Nicholson's saying, right? Like, he's making a good point that some shit needs to be done.
And you need me on that wall. Yeah.
You need me on that wall. You don't want to think about it, but I got to be there. And so I do think those guys that those are the guys that are at the VFW or the like you said on the
right.
cruises have the vet hat. Those kind of guys are you know. So you know that's not it's you know I'm much more I'm close to a comedian
right
that yeah, isn't going to buy into that in well, the same way. But
I can
I'm happy
talk
those people.
Yeah, I can talk comedy to a point, yes. You know, but I don't want to talk about it all the time. You know
all
what I mean?
Time.
And so yeah. I worry about like, you can only rehash it so much. And again, yeah. I don't want to belittle anything that they do, but some of it's probably pretty painful. And I guess you want to find your tribe, you know, for anything, but I can only geek out on any subject to a point. Travel, you know, if there was a travel lodge, would I join?
Yes.
Maybe, but I'm not, not going to wear a hat every day on the show. Ask me about traveling. You know, some days I don't want to talk about it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I want people to come up to me and go, thank you for your travel.
Thank you for your
service in the travel industry. But I'm convinced some of those guys just want, they want free stuff. They want a free beer, you know, and they.
I was going to say that's, you know, you talked about now it's a thing where you say it. That is what I remember. And it wasn't the same. You know, we live near Great Lakes, which, you know, is
the naval base
in Chicago. So I do remember as a kid, every once in a while being out. And I don't know where a restaurant or maybe in the city or whatever. It may maybe even Navy Pier, not what it is now, but my dad seeing someone in uniform and he'd always buy him a drink.
Uh-huh.
You know, be like, you know, he'd point down and be like, that's on me, you know, blah blah blah, that kind of thing. So yeah, I think there might be an angle to that. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your service anyway. I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna keep saying it. Thank you for your hot cot service.
You're welcome.
Oh, man.
You're welcome.
That's the most impressive thing.
You need me out there, hot cot.
You need me on that mattress.
Put me on top of that other guy who hasn't got out of the bed.
I described every girl I described that to goes, oh, that sounds horrible. I go, yeah, it sounds. Most guys are like, oh.
No, there was an outbreak because of it. On our ship, there was an outbreak of scabies.
Oh,
because you have people who you know,
don't shower.
If you got three people and one of them's not as clean as the other, it's going to quickly spread.
Oh boy, yeah,
yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I'm sure I asked you this. What was the last question? I got a million sub questions.
Yeah,
so I'm asking you as a submariner.
How dare you?
It's submarine. What is the shower situation there? Because there's a limited amount of water, I gotta imagine.
Yeah, in fact, one of my jobs on the ship was in control of the water supply and making fresh water and stuff like that. So yeah, we would always be pounding out people if they were taking too long of showers and stuff. So we called it a Navy shower, a submarine shower. It was very tight, no more tight than though the one you have on the cruise ship.
Okay.
It was about that size, but there was a little valve on the shower head, so what you were required to do was go in, you turn it on, you know, you lather up and you're supposed to turn it off then.
Okay.
Well, you lather up and then you could turn it back on to rinse off.
Oh boy.
So that was it. That was the Navy shower to kind of save the, you know, water supply. So you didn't have to go through it too quickly. So yeah. But yeah, not too bad.
Oof, boy, oh boy. Ever get flashbacks when you're working on a cruise ship and like, oh, this reminds me of just staring out into that ocean. Like, oh, this brings back.
never the ocean. There was only, I think, the two times in the whole time I was on the submarine.
You could see.
Where I actually went up.
Oh, really?
You know, because if you surface, then there's, you know, the sail. If you can picture a submarine, we call it the sail, was sticking up. And when you'd be up on the surface, you know, three people could be up in the sails. Usually, you know, whoever's driving, you know, the captain or who's those duties, and then the junior person. Then you could kind of go up like, hey, you know, Maison wants to come up and look at the ocean. Yeah, all right, let him come up. You know, that kind of
breathe
thing.
Actual air.
For 7 weeks, yeah. But yeah, you could look out the periscope all the time, but you know, that was just, yeah, like you said, you see other ships. But every once in a while on a cruise ship, I'll be walking. You know those times where...
In the crew area?
The crew area, and you'll walk near either two things, the where they're keeping all the food or there's some of the machinery. So either that smell of like the diesel fuel or that mass, I don't know what to even describe it as, that mass storage of cold food. There's like a smell to that, right? Like a wet.
It all comes back to you.
Smell or something in it. Yeah, just six pack and I have, yeah, flashback. And no. No, please. Oh,
no.
Okay. I'm on a luxurious cruise ship. Oh, thank God.
Oh, thank God there's a buffet. I can still go.
But I'm going to the water slide.
I can still go play bingo if I need to. Oof, what a relief.
Yeah.
So, okay, where can people find you and give your website and socials and anything else you want to plug?
SteveMazan.com, MAZAN, no ski.
Short for nothing.
Short for nothing. It's just as it is. SteveMazan.com. And then on the, social media, it's all that as well, at Steve Mazan for Instagram, TikTok, all that kind of stuff.
Great.
Any
shows coming up people can go see you, or are you going to be on the high seas? And
I think it's all high seas coming up. Yeah.
Okay.
New Year show. Actually, I have a New Year show in the Bay Area. I said with a Martinez, I think it is.
Okay.
Is where I'm going to be performing. So if anyone's listening from up in that area, yeah, New Year's Eve with my buddy Lee Levine. I don't know if you know Lee.
No, is this a club or a theater?
I think it's a little theater out there.
Oh, and fun.
They do a New Year's show every year. So,
oh, yeah. That'll be great.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, it's always nice to do something. Right, New Year's is one of those nights I think all the years I've had one great New Year's in my life where it's like that's the memorable one, and all the others have been like, meh.
Yeah.
I would have had just as much fun staying in and
exactly. Oh no, it's the worst night to go out. It's horrible, you know. But we'd always work it because
I was going to say I love working it.
Yeah, because it was usually a better money night and
better money. Yeah,
yeah, and then it saved you the hassle of trying to find something fun to do that which is impossible.
Yeah, you're making money when everyone else is shelling it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I appreciate you doing this. Hang on, and I'll talk to you afterwards. But yeah, it's always good to catch up again. I appreciate you doing
it. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, fun talking to you.
Steve Mazan, everybody.
If you love travel, you'll love Winging It Travel Podcast. Every Monday, I share stories from 75 countries, from backpacking tips, epic adventures, and plenty of travel inspiration. Alongside that, I host guest interviews every 2 weeks. Check it out at voicegate.com.
Travel isn't just about where you go, it's how you do it. Curious Tourism explores the impact of travel with Aaron Hines and Katie Lahr. Check it out at voyescape.com.